back.
We're back. We're bad.
We're back, baby.
He's Paul. I'm mad.
And together we're crazy.
That's a Lethal Weapon joke, which is a great film that you can watch at Christmas because the first one is very Christmas-focused.
I need to watch it. Don't get me wrong, I know it's a great film. I've seen it many times previously, but I haven't seen it for a long time. So I definitely do need to see it at some point this year.
Do you want... I just dropped you a pile of films. Do you want me to drop you that as well?
No. I've got that. You've got it.
Okay.
I just haven't seen it for quite some time. That's all. But
that's
the only issue with having kids. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love them and all that type of jazz. But you don't really get to see too many of those 15 sweary, shooty films very much.
You've got evenings. They're in bed.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, right, shall we start?
To be fair, and in your defence, you do get piled up with new stuff to watch that isn't
out
yet.
This is the other thing, yeah. New films, new TV shows, and all the other usual bits and pieces.
I always hold back the classics for Sunday.
Yeah, well, again, so we've gone way off topic already, but shock, I know, shock horror.
Really? Me? On a tangent?
When the kids are off this Christmas, obviously they've got their iPads and different TVs and bits and pieces, so I'm hoping to squeeze in a few classics this year that I haven't got to see in a while.
I did do a Christmas film advent calendar last year. I haven't had a chance to do it this year.
Oh, I know, right?
But I do have a sparkly brand new copy of Gremlins in 4K that I think is going to have to get.
Again, that's another film that I can't watch because of that scene.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to give that a spin, I think.
Yeah, I've been really wanting to watch it with my daughter, but just can't do it just yet.
We will, actually, do you know what we will do? Let's do Christmas films on one episode before Christmas, maybe.
What, our favourite Christmas films?
Yeah, let's do that. Maybe make it a tip-top five as well. But I think right now... We'll save that conversation, but yeah, I tend to lean out of the way of the traditional ones and move more towards Batman Returns and Lethal Weapon and things like Iron Man 3, things that have got Christmas in them as opposed to Christmas films. But anyway, speaking of, we've got one of those.
We do.
Coming
yes,
up, which
yes.
isn't necessarily a Christmas film, but is probably going to be a Christmas classic.
Shall we introduce ourselves?
We probably should.
Probably should, because we've been talking for 15 minutes and not said who we are.
No, we haven't.
He's John Brown, I'm Paul Marsh, and you are listening to We're Gonna Need a Bigger Pod.
He's Paul Marsh, and I'm John Brown.
Something like that.
Somewhere that way round.
Yeah, something.
Thank you very much. It's been a crazy couple of weeks, and we've got a crazy couple of weeks coming up. We do have lots to share with you, though, especially this episode. I mean, what an episode we have got coming up. Paul, give us some highlights real quick.
I've been looking forward to this one for a while, haven't I? I'm really excited about this. So, obviously, we're going to be looking at the news, what's been going on. We've got a couple of trailers to talk about. We've got a big film to talk about. We've got a big interview to play.
Yeah, we do.
We're going to be talking about the new Wonka movie.
Yeah, we are.
I can't wait. And you lucky devil, you got to speak to director Paul King and songmeister Neil Hannon.
Yes, of the Divine Comedy. Yes. So it's been directed by Paul King, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Paul King does join us on this very podcast. Oh, he of Paddington and Paddington 2, greatest cinematic masterpiece, which I do address with him in the interview, which you'll hear about. He's very humble about it. Again, which you'll hear. Also, yes, we've got Neil Hannon, the Neil Hannon from The Divine Comedy. He's also in on that special interview, which you can hear on this podcast. And just to double up to make sure we're going full Wonka on this one, we also have Joby Talbot, the composer, and Neil Hannon again. So I got him twice. I must have said something right. Neil Hannon and Joby join us on Scoreheads as well this week. So, which I think is coming out Monday the 11th.
Something like
that. Roundabout
something
there, yes.
Like
it is that, on the Composer Series on Express on Sunday the 10th at 6 p.m, though. I know that much for sure. So, yeah, we've got lots of Wonka content to share with you cross-platform. But keep it right here, because we will be giving you a deep dive, a spoiler-free deep dive on Wonka very shortly, as well as that interview with Paul and Neil. All right.
And also Joe Barton from The Lazarus Project as
yes.
well.
Yes. Oh, like all the things.
And, of course, we have got our tip top five, which is all about musicals in honor of Wonka.
Yes, it is. Yeah, we're celebrating Wonka all the way through this week across this podcast on Scoreheads and on Express FM as well. So keep it locked. If you want to follow us, I'm at John Brown TV. That's at J-O-N Brown TV.
I'm at Paul Swampy Marsh on all socials as well.
And at Need a Bigger Pod. Give us all your feedback. Send him the good stuff, send the bad stuff, because I laugh at these things. Anyway, on to the show.
So heading straight into the news, and this one has kind of come out not that long after we've sort of been recording, really.
Literally minutes before we got in here.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan is going to get a BFI fellowship.
Rightly so.
Now, right, you'll know a little bit more about this than me, so you can explain this. Is a fellowship kind of like a cinema knighthood?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I don't actually know too much about it myself, although we do dabble in working with the great folks at BFI from time to time. I do understand it's one of the highest honours, though. Yeah.
So basically, it's the BFI kind of going, well done, chap. Well done. Yes. Bloody good work. Yes. Well done.
Yes. Well, and rightly so. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a bad Christopher Nolan film. That's for sure.
Oh, you got me thinking. I don't think there must.
I've told you this story before, but I saw Christopher Nolan. He was touring, promoting Memento in 2000.
Oh, what a film.
And that's the first I ever saw or heard of him. And then I saw Memento and was absolutely blown away by it. And I think it was my favourite film of that particular festival that I was at. Oh, the days when I used to have time for those things. Anyway, yes, no, I saw a young Christopher Nolan very proudly presenting his film Memento. And
no, so I'm looking through the list now.
What
and
a film.
And it's up there with, you know, he is up there with the Tarantinos of has not made a bad film.
Yeah, every film is,
you know,
absolutely.
Obviously, so you've got Memento, you've got the Batman trilogy, The Prestige, Inception.
Wait, every film he's made is Interstellar.
Oh!
Oh, there it is! Yeah, if you get the 4K steelbooks of his work, they're kind of keepsakes, you know, like Mementos. No? Okay,
I'm
we'll
trying
stop.
To find a way of you squeezing Oppenheimer in, but it's not going to work, is it? Not going to work.
Christopher, no. Anyway, yeah, no, Christopher Nolan, what a legend and a master filmmaker, and I'm really pleased that he's getting that award, because it is a prestigious award, and I'm very happy for him. He is a great filmmaker. He continues that passion and enthusiasm that I saw him present at that festival that day when he presented us with Memento before it came out. And he continues to have that love and passion for cinema right down there. And he's currently championing physical media, and I'm all for that. So, yes. And also, for anyone that's never seen Memento, by the way, it's just been re-released on Blu-ray in a really lovely box set with lots of little collector's pieces in it. So look that up online if you can still get one. But I highly recommend it. It was his first seriously released movie, and it was fantastic. And interestingly, within 5 years, he made Batman Begins.
Amazing, isn't it?
A massive step up, isn't it? Especially for someone like Warner and DC and then what a trilogy of films. Arguably the best Batman trilogy, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I know some of the new stuff coming out is very, very good, but
the Batman's great. The Batman is really solid.
But as a trilogy, I think that stands up there on the shoulders of the real ones, you know?
Without any shadow. So, yeah. Round of applause for Christopher Nolan, I think. Yes. Excellent work. Excellent work. What's next?
So one of the best horror movies of, I want to say last year, was it? Was it Black Phone last year?
I think so.
I think it was,
All the years mould into
they
one.
Do,
don't
very
they
very much so. But I think it was certainly one of the best films, or one of the best horror movies of last year. The Black Phone has been announced that it has a sequel, which very, very happy about, because I really, really enjoyed Black Phone. I thought it was very good. Scott Derrickson, who is, again, when it comes to horror, he's just a legend.
Love Scott.
Yeah.
And he knows it.
Okay. Does the restraining order prove that?
No, not at all. He's very open to discussion online, for example. Being positive.
Yes,
yeah,
he is,
certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I did actually ask him if he'd like to come on the pod. He didn't say no. He didn't say yes either.
But okay. we'll take that as a win. We'll take that as a win. So it's been announced that it is going to be a returning cast of Ethan Hawke, Mason Thames, Madeline McGraw, Jeremy Davies and Miguel Mora. They are all back on board.
Excellent. Black Phone 2 is going to be very interesting. The Black Phone is absolutely stunning.
It's so good. I mean, so I spoke good. About that, obviously, Five Nights at Freddy's, how the subplot of that reminded me a little of Black Phone and how I really, really enjoyed that. So
we've been very lucky with horror, which I know is going to link us beautifully to our next story. We've been very, very lucky with horror. I mean, Evil Dead Rise was phenomenally good.
And while you mentioned that, Campbell has said there's going to be more Evil Dead Rises. Not Evil Dead Rises, there could be more Evil Dead films.
I'd like to hope so. Like, I think they've started something...
With
that new generation of Evil Dead filmmakers.
So he's basically just said that they're going to be every 2 to 3 years rather than every 10 years, which I think we're all quite happy about.
Yeah, there's always room for more Evil Dead. I think I speak for most horror fans when I say that.
In the cinema.
In the cinema, yes. As long as there's no cheese graters! There we go. Right. But which beautifully links us on to our next story about Thanksgiving, too.
Yes, which again, I think we both said that we absolutely loved Thanksgiving, and it's one of our horror highlights of the year. It's just a thoroughly enjoyable movie. It's not... to the same gross out level as Evil Dead.
I don't know. I mean,
it's got a few moments.
There's a scene.
But it's a lot more. Yeah, there is. Yeah. It's a lot more in keeping with Scream and various other movies like that are just enjoyable slasher horrors. And so the great news is that Eli Roth has announced that Thanksgiving 2 is coming in 2025.
Yes. I said to you, didn't I? If he turns this into a franchise a la Scream, I'd be very happy. And I think I'm not the only one to say that.
I would be overjoyed with that. And funny enough, I almost said, I wonder if we'll be returning. And I stopped myself.
Yes, you should stop yourself.
So you should be very proud of me.
I'm very, very proud of you.
I've been out like 3 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah, so still right into spoiler territory, yeah.
Yeah, if you're getting optioned already on the basis of that strong 3 weeks, you're doing very well. And it's still playing strong, really, really strong. I think at the moment, cinema... And again, we talk about... Oh, cinema's dead. And it's like, really?
No.
Like, there's a three-way tie at the moment for box office between... Who was it? Actually, do you know what? We were talking about this the other day. The live concert stuff. Live concerts. Things like Cliff Richard, Andre Rieu. But those event cinema screenings are incredibly popular because the concert tickets, at this time of year, concert tickets are very expensive unless you're gifting them to someone, right? So for cinemas to be able to broadcast the recordings of these concerts, that's become a very popular thing in cinemas.
So I have to say, literally, as we're recording this, I was up at the London O2 last night to see a concert. And not only was it really expensive, which it was really expensive... Mm. But then you've also got the travel up there and, you know, we lost like half a day or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, it's a long old journey. And, you know, as much as I did enjoy it and I loved it, if somebody offered me that same exact experience at my local cinema with a bit of popcorn and a slushy or something like that, I think I'd be on board with that.
Would you see last night's concert on a view screen? For example.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
So that's proven very popular. But I think at the moment, box office-wise, event cinema is really big at the moment. And then you've got concert films like Renaissance by Beyoncé and Taylor Swift. They are still taking serious money. Interestingly, the thing that's continuously sold out at the moment, and I think that will probably dissipate after this weekend because of a certain other thing that's chocolate related called Wonka, the Hunger Games is still selling out left, right and centre. So, and we know Five Nights did really well. We know Thanksgiving's doing really well.
There's been far more movies to over exceed expectations this year than to under, you know. There's been a lot of films that have really, I mean, obviously it goes without saying that Barbie blew everything out of the water. But there's been a lot of films that everyone has gone, this is Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
This has done really, really well. Have another movie.
Napoleon as well. Yeah. Sold out. Yeah. Your screening was sold out, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was good literally down to the last single seat or two. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good time for cinema. And we've got more to come, obviously. We've got Wonka still to come. That's going to be the big one. Aquaman, we've still got to come as well. Right on Christmas week. So, yeah, lots more to play for in terms of cinema admissions. But horror is alive and well, as it always has been. I mean, horror has always survived in one format or another. You know, when I was growing up in the 80s, obviously, I couldn't see what cinema attendance was like for horror because I wasn't old enough to go in. I do understand, though, I remember feeling really, really, really bad because I wasn't old enough to see Bram Stoker's Dracula, and I really wanted to when it came out in 92. But I understand that sold really well. And in my day, or our day, should I say, because we're not that far apart in age, is that video. VHS was a massive platform for horror. And so horror will always come out on top, I think. And so, yeah, more please. That's my summary. But yes, what's next?
Speaking of more and sequels, Will Smith has been sharing new details about I Am Legend 2, which he stars in and produces alongside with Michael B. Jordan. Variety have got him quoted as saying, "I have a call with Michael B. Jordan tomorrow. We're really close. Script just came in."
Okay, so is Michael B. Jordan making it or starring in it? Because Francis Lawrence made the first one. Interesting that this links all the way back to James Newton Howard, who scored it, which is a whole another conversation for Scoreheads. You can hear that now, by the way. If you go to this channel, on this very channel, there's a special Scoreheads episode with the composer of I Am Legend and The Hunger Games, James Newton Howard, the legend that is, with Sean and I. But yes, I Am Legend is Francis Lawrence, which of course who directs the, also directs The Hunger Games. So I was interested to see if I Am Legend 2 has got anything to do with Francis, because Francis has just been signed on to another project.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if it's still the same team, because Michael B. Jordan and Will Smith having calls together tells me that maybe Michael might direct.
Maybe. So, maybe. Maybe he might play an earlier version of Will, maybe. Who knows?
Or maybe Will directs and Michael B. Jordan's
maybe
in it.
Maybe. Yeah. So, well, it says here, Will Smith has said, "You have to be real. I am legend buff to know this, but in the first theatrical version, my character dies." Spoiler. To a, 12-year-old film, whatever it is. But on the DVD, there was an alternate version of the ending where my character lived. We are going with the mythology of the DVD version. I can't tell you anything more, but Michael B. Jordan is in.
Okay, now...
So again, it's very ambiguous, isn't it?
At first glance, over here, I'm kind of going, we're going to make a film based off a DVD extra.
That's very strange, isn't it?
On the other hand, Michael B. Jordan, one of the nicest people I've ever met, being involved, who is incredibly talented at everything he touches, makes me very interested in this. And so is Will, to be fair. So is Will. Of course, Will is as well.
I mean, but I have gone on record many times as saying I love I Am Legend, and I think his performance in it is so strong.
Yeah, it's an I Am. Oh, his performance in it is fantastic. It's just the video game vampires I can't get my head around.
Yeah, I know. Well, obviously, it's come a long way since then, so fingers crossed this will be interesting. You're slightly older than me, so you may know this a little bit better than me. You remember that there was a whole season of, was it Dallas or something like that, which was a Bobby Ewing dream?
Oh, right, yeah.
So
yeah,
I do wonder if the start of I Am Legend 2 is going to be something along the lines of him dying was a dream sequence
Don't do it. It's what we call the...
How else are they going to crowbar it?
It's called the lazy filmmaking
faux pas. It is very, very, very lazy. How else are they going to crowbar him dying at the end of I Am Legend and then being alive?
It's the worst thing ever. It was all a dream. Like, don't go there. Yeah. Don't do that.
You're not Notorious B.I.G. You can't pull it off.
I'm on two levels here. On the one hand, if you said to me, I Am Legend 2, and I just went, oh. But then you say Michael B. Jordan, and I'm like,
He's certainly done well with Creed, hasn't he?
That being said, this could be an opportunity for... I said, the thing is, like, I Am Legend is a really strong movie about a man really trying to come to terms with... He's trying to essentially save the world, but coming to terms with dealing with loneliness and everything that he has to go through. It's really powerful from him.
Very,
and
very good.
He's really good in it. And this is the thing. I don't diss him or the movie. I diss the fact that he's giving everything in this movie, and yet he's let down by...
Some CGI.
Yeah. I mean, even the dog was amazing. So... Yeah, I think I'm up for it. And also, I kind of feel like this is their shot at doing it over, but to a level that makes it just exceptional. But anyway, we'll see.
Right, so very quickly wrapping up the news section. Sonic 3 has got a release date, and it's got a release date of December the 20th, 2024. My son was ecstatic about the fact that the teaser poster features Shadow.
I want Jason Statham for Shadow.
In an English accent, right?
Yeah, just
in an English accent.
Do it, because we got it. It's funny because Idris is obviously.
But Idris has been doing great American accents for a while, and his accent in that is kind of like in between anyway.
So Idris was in 2, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Right. So I kind of feel like having two quite notorious Sonic universe characters being essentially voiced by, you know, Statham and.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's
like a Hobbs and Shaw reunion, right? So all we need now is The Rock to voice a Sonic character, and we're all in.
Well, of course, the big question I have is Jim Carrey going to be in it? And if he's not going to be in it, who's going to play Dr. Robotnik? Because that's big shoes to fill.
Yeah, there is that, but I know that Jim will answer the call for Jeff Fowler, because Jim and Jeff are really tight. And I know that, you know, Jim wants kind of, out, I guess, to retire, for want of a better description, doesn't he? He's only doing things he really, wants to do. And I know he really, really loves this franchise, and he really loves Jeff Fowler.
And he, by the way, he's great. He is so good as Dr. Robotnik.
And I think also the other thing, I mean, if you want any indication as to how tight Jeff and Jim are, Jeff suggested that they make an Ace Ventura 3, and Jim was like, if Jeff's making it, I'll do it.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is a this could be hearsay, it could be a conversation. Yeah, Jim Carrey could sit in this room right now and go, I don't know where you get your information from, my friends, but that's not the case. However, the rumor on the grapevine is that Jeff actually had a conversation with Jim, and I don't even know if it was a serious conversation. I think it was just like, oh, what if I made Ace Ventura 3? And Jim was like, I'm all in. So I think it's the filmmaker that makes it, right? It's that relationship between actor and director. Jim will do things for Jeff Fowler. So I'm interested to see if Jim would do this because it's Jeff Fowler. Like, I think if they handed directing over to someone else, Jim would probably go Jeff.
Hard pass.
But I think right now they need to keep that team in place, because Jeff Fowler and the creative team, the digital team, you know, the characters look good now.
Sonic franchise has exceeded all expectations.
Yeah, I think they need to keep that team. They need to keep their main two casts. Yep. Like, they're really great together. They've got a great chemistry. Yep. Like Junkie XL scores all of these movies.
Listen, they're great. Like, one and two are great family movies.
Keep that team for the third one, and I think you've got another box office on your hands.
So we're going to have a look at the latest trailers that have literally just dropped in the last couple of days. The first one we're going to look at is a big one. It is Godzilla and Kong, the New Empire.
For most of human civilization, we believed that life could only exist on the surface of our planet. What else were we wrong about?
I like movies that have sequels, but the sequel can act as a standalone.
Yeah,
are certain things that if you've seen the previous movies will benefit it. However, if you haven't seen it, you're not completely lost. You don't need to have, like Marvel, you don't need to have seen the previous 228 movies. And this looks like it can stand alone. If you've seen previous, you'll understand it a bit better. If you haven't seen previous, you'll still enjoy it.
Yeah, it's part of the whole Legacy Monarch, Monsterverse, you know, Godzilla King of the Monsters, Kong Skull Island. It's part of that. And also the Apple series that we've got running now, that's with Kurt Russell. That's all part and parcel of the same
universe.
Is that
out, by the way?
It is, yeah. It's on
Apple
TV+.
I need to get on that because I think myself and my son will really enjoy that one.
Kurt and Wyatt Russell. What else do you need to know?
Oh, I love Kurt. I'm a huge man crush on Kurt.
By the way, if you're screenshotting images from Apple TV+, with Kurt Russell, and then trying to pass them off on the internet at the moment as exclusive photos from The Thing 2, stop it.
Is that what people are doing?
Because obviously there's scenes in tents in the snow and stuff, so everyone's going, exclusive look at The Thing 2. From myself and probably John Carpenter, because I'm pretty certain John Carpenter would feel the same way about this, stop doing that. Because it's not. It's from Monarch.
We're not getting The Thing 2, and I'll tell you why we're not getting The Thing 2, is because it would spoil the ending of The Thing.
Yeah, because that's why they made this. The other movie they made was a prequel, right? With Joel Edgerton. So, I like both those movies for very different reasons. I mean, The Thing, the original Thing, stands above and beyond this. Probably, great horror, right? But, back to Godzilla.
Godzilla and Kong,
this is the next in that franchise. Listen, these films are your traditional popcorn blockbusters.
Yeah, listen, like I said, I'm all here for it. It's got a really nice cast again. Rebecca Hall is always great. Dan Stevens, Alex Ferns, EastEnders alumni. I always like him in that.
Is that terrible Trevor?
Yes.
Yeah. He's doing well. He's doing fantastic. Yeah, he was in Batman recently.
I'm only going on the trailer. I think it looks great so far. I'm all in for it. The only thing, and you mentioned this earlier with the Batman and Robin comment, at the very end of the trailer, it shows Kong and Godzilla running away from something altogether or whatever.
It looks a lot like it just needs a bat logo in the background, right?
Kong running doesn't look too bad. Godzilla running does not look good. It does not look natural at all.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
It is. It is what it is. Right, I think I'm going to probably leave you to talk a lot about the next one because, again, this is very much in your realm.
That's 12th of April, by the way, isn't it?
Yes,
the
apologies.
The same day. Yeah. 12th of, so it's headed to cinemas 12th of April, which is the same day as the new Fallout TV series.
Yes, so this is a you thing.
It's not, actually.
Is it not? Is this not a game that you play?
I've had this a couple of times. I was like, oh, it's a game thing, so it must be yours. And I'm like, no. You've never played Fallout. I've never played Fallout. I've played a lot of video games, especially in the last year, but Fallout, I've never played. I don't know why. That is something. Maybe I can remedy that over the Christmas break, because I do have Fallout.
Have you heard any rumblings from the video game community about is it being received well or not received well?
I have no idea, but I do know fans, serious diehard fans of Fallout, and they are quite happy about this.
Okay.
I can tell you that. So that's probably the best review you can ask for. So, yes. No, I don't know anything about it. In fact, I need to put it on my list. When we're on Christmas break, that's what I might do.
A game you're going to sit down
and play. I might have a go at Fallout. Well, there are Fallout games. There are many games. But I have Fallout games. But I just haven't played them. I have like 1,000 games.
Well, give me
some credit.
Going on purely on the trailer, it looks interesting. It's obviously set in a future post-apocalyptic Los Angeles where there's all kinds of mutants and aliens and post-war stuff going on. And it looks interesting. It's a series rather than a movie, so you can never tell too much because, you know, if you've got 8 to 10 hours of reel, for want of a better word, then to cut up a 2-minute trailer, you could be taking anything from anything, so you never really know a lot about it. It looks to be some humour interspersed into it, which I'm all here for. Again, it's got some great actors interspersed throughout it. It's got Walter Goggins, who is a favourite of mine, Carl McLaughlin and people like that, so it's got some great actors interspersed throughout it. I'm intrigued enough to probably put on an episode or two.
It'd be interesting to see if that tempts you into wanting to play the game. But honestly,
It will not, because I'm not a gamer, but I will certainly take an interest.
I think certain games need television series because it gives more time to tell the story. And the thing with Fallout, and they should have done this with Assassin's Creed, to be fair, there is so many universes like Assassin's Creed and Fallout are so vast. There is so much going on. I mean, I get with things like Borderlands, for example. There's a Borderlands movie coming. Now, I get that that is a very different animal because you can do a Borderlands movie. I think that's possible because of what Borderlands is, it lends itself very. It's very Mad Max, but it does lend itself towards a cinematic setting. Fallout does. And so does Assassin's Creed. However, the universes are so large that I think Assassin's Creed should have been a television series. And I agree that Fallout being a television series is the absolute right move because you've got lots and lots of storytelling there.
It makes a lot more sense, doesn't it? You can expand on that universe a lot more rather than a 2-hour movie. It does make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
So that is coming out on Amazon Prime on April 12th of 2024.
First episode. It'll be weekly, I think.
I would imagine so.
Yeah, it's a good 12th of April is a good day.
If
you're into gaming or you're into a franchise or two, then that's a big day at the cinema and at home.
At home and then head out to the cinema to watch Godzilla Kong.
Yeah, why not?
You mentioned Mad Max earlier.
Yeah.
Nice little segue there. I liked it. I don't know if you did it on purpose or not. You'll probably...
Let's just say yes. Yeah.
Let's say I'm that good. Furiosa, a Mad Max saga.
I'm Furiosa!
The darkest of angels. The question is, do you have it in you to make it epic?
Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. So yeah, this is George Miller again. George Miller, I love George Miller. He is just brilliant. This is a guy that says, you know what, I'm just going to do a thing and I'll do it. And he does it. Like, Mad Max is great, Road Warrior is great. Beyond Thunderdome, I always found quite interesting because I kind of feel like there's a clear difference between Mad Max 1, 2, and 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because 3 kind of feels... 1 feels very... I mean, they're all very Australian, especially the first two.
Yeah.
But the first and second one have got that real gritty post-apocalyptic vibe about them, and I really, really like them. The third one kind of feels like the studio went... This is really popular. Here is lots of money.
Yeah.
Make this a blockbuster.
Yeah.
And so this is the thing, right? The difference between Beyond Thunderdome and Mad Max with Tom Hardy is I think 3 is a good story and it's a good movie. I mean, there are a couple of movies that it kind of feels like it's trying to be, but ultimately I kind of feel like 1 and 2 are absolute classics. They're perfect. They're amazing films. 3 feels like this is the film the studio wanted you to make. We wanted to make it a blockbuster. Whereas I think Mad Max Fury Road, right, that one was a film he wanted to make and it became a blockbuster.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
do you see the difference between the two?
Oh, yeah.
One is for him, one is for the studio, right? I know Spielberg says this all the time. You make one for you, you make one for them.
Yes, yeah.
So Mad Max Fury Road is probably one of the greatest action films ever made as a result.
Wow, that's a big statement.
Yeah, I think so. As a result of that. And so, yeah, I think Fury Road, I mean, the first, we're of a certain generation, so the first one stands pretty tall and high. But Mad Max Fury Road is absolutely sensational. And honestly, I think I like, there's a cheesy lovability to Beyond Thunderdome, I think.
So, I like Fury Road.
Mm.
Maybe I need to watch it again.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
I don't love it, but I liked it. I liked it enough that I would sit and watch it again.
I know there's a massive difference. There's like 30 years difference or whatever, because Mad Max, Beyond Thunderdome was 85, wasn't it?
And of course,
it features the dearly missed Tina Turner in it, of course. Mm-hmm. She's fantastic in it, and it gave us that song. And I think the song has actually outlasted the movie. But
yes, it has, yeah.
Yeah, it just feels like 1 and 2 are just standalone. They're just phenomenal. And then the third one kind of feels like the studio went, can you make this big movie? And George Miller went, of course I can. And then he did it their way. And then Mad Max Fury Road kind of feels like him going, right, my turn. Hold my beer.
Yeah,
and then he's done it his way and they've made a blockbuster out of it.
The look of Furiosa really does sort of lead off of Fury Road. It looks very, very similar.
Well, it is. It's a prequel, isn't it, essentially?
Oh, is it really? Okay. Yeah. There was a TV show called Blood Drive and it just reminds me so much of that, which was very, very good. It's Blood Drive had, who's Reacher? Jack Reacher now.
Alan Ritchson.
Yes, it had him in it, and he was excellent. And Christina,
the big man.
Christina Ochoa.
Mm.
That's a really good TV series, if you haven't seen it, by the way. Again, so listen, with Furiosa, I certainly like the trailer enough that it's intriguing me to go and want to watch it.
Yeah.
Anything with Anya Taylor-Joy is going to pique my interest because she's very, very good.
Yeah, she is, yeah. And this has got a great cast. Chris Hemsworth's in this. It looks really, really good. But honestly, again, there are no bad Mad Max movies. There are just some that are slightly better than others.
Yeah.
There are no bad Mad Max movies. In the same way, there's no bad Lethal Weapon movies. Oh, we just linked back to Mel Gibson and Christmas and the top of the hour at the same time. Look at that. That is an actual like home run. But yes, there is no such thing as a bad Mad Max movie. Yes, there are some that are slightly better than others. However, this looks solid. I think it's going to be good no matter what.
So that's got a release date of the 24th of May, 2024.
Big weekend.
And I was just about to say, I'm sure we did a trailer a couple of weeks ago that had a late May. It was like we were talking about it being the first big blockbuster of the year. So that's going to be a couple of big blockbusters coming out in May. So
it looks like
summer could be beginning early.
Yeah, I think May. Well, I don't know. May can be quite good in general for the start of blockbuster season. I know it used to be June, July and then August. July and August were always the big days. But I think, you know, we're going from May to... Well, we're in award season right now, for example, aren't we? Apart from festive movies, again, which links us back to Wonka. But yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So, out in cinemas this week, you have Tarak, The Peasants, The Origin, The Inseparables, a lot of the films there, Anselm, Please Don't Destroy, The Treasure of Foggy Mountain, all out in cinemas this week. However,
the big one.
There is one big film out in cinemas this week that we have been looking forward to talking about for quite some time.
So, we saw this early, which was great, because obviously we... again, as we've mentioned before, because of the sheer amount of interviews that we were very fortunate to be able to do. So we were very lucky in that we got to, thanks to Warner Brothers, check this out a couple ago. Yeah. So we, yeah. And that was nice because I think it gave us an opportunity to really sit and take it in without any of the hype train that follows it, if yeah. that's right. I always prefer seeing a film as early as possible because I kind of feel like it's just before the hype train starts, before the PR train starts, before the interview tour
starts. Well, this
start,
is it. So we literally...
It's just you and the movie,
other
right?
than the trailer, which we'd seen, we literally knew nothing about this film at all. No, so but, what, yeah, I, what I want to say is that this is what I said going into the film. Mm. And this doesn't bear reflection on what we actually think about it, by the way. This is what I said before the film. I said... what I'm expecting is a 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
The worst it's going to be is a 3 out of 5. And if yeah. it's really good, it'll be a 5 out of 5. That's kind of, that was where I was sitting before we went in.
Yeah. And you were like, the 5 is a real stretch though.
Yes.
And that's kind of what you, and that's fair enough because you were kind of just gauging it. And we always talk about things like that. But I think, like I said, going back to being able to see it this early, I prefer it. And I'd love to do this like with every movie. I prefer it this way because like you say, you haven't got any, you know, you haven't got casts on the Graham Norton show, or you haven't got half the cast on our show, yeah, or yeah. composers, or whatever. You haven't got that influence from the studio. You haven't got the trailers, the hype campaigns, the billboards, all the stuff that, you know, the goodie bags, all the stuff that comes at you like en masse when we get to this point of a movie's campaign. If you see it a few weeks before or a month before or whatever, then you're in that place where it's just you and the film.
Yeah.
That's it, right? Yeah. You haven't got any outside influence, or reviews aren't out yet.
Yeah, for you example, haven't seen literally
you
anything at all.
You've got anything to influence you. So it's in its purest form, it's you connecting to the film and it's what you think. You haven't got anything trying to kind of, I wouldn't say brainwash because that's negative, but talk
when you
into
when
liking
you see,
it,
if
right?
you see 100 people saying a film's rubbish,
yeah.
you can't help but go in with a negative impact.
No, and the reason why I'm building this up so high and the way that I am and over-explaining it in the manner that I am over-explaining it is because when you're in that essential moment, it means our first impression is pure.
Yes.
And so when we tell you that we're completely in love with this movie, it's because it comes from a place of being completely in love with the movie and not because we're enamoured or been courted with all the loveliness of the PR drive and everything else. Like, we did actually connect with this movie on a personal level, and that's what's important. But yeah, I think not to, obviously it is set in Roald Dahl's wonky universe. I won't spoil a single frame of this because I just think, as you and I have just explained, it is better going in completely and totally clear, because that's what we did and we got the most out of it for that. But what we can tell you is that it is, of course, set within... it features the characters created by Roald Dahl, but it is a completely new story. This yes. is an origin story. This was written by Simon Farnaby and Paul King, the director. Simon Farnaby, of course, a very, very funny man. He's also appears in it as well. That it sets up nicely, like, how did Willy become Wonka?
Yes. Yeah.
That's essentially it. In its purest... most spoiler-free form.
Because when you think about the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory,
yeah.
he's already a recluse. Mm-hmm. He's already got this huge chocolate factory, and there's already an air of mystery about him.
Yeah.
So this takes it way back before yes. before any of that.
He's essentially a young man in this, and what it's essentially explaining is how he got there. And it's a completely original story, a beautifully told one at that. It's got an incredible cast. Timothy Chalamet really, yeah. really brings out
yeah.
all the big guns on this in terms of his performance. He is literally all singing and all dancing in this. And he steals the film. I say he steals the film. There are so many good actors and characters.
Quite simply, there is not a bad performance.
There's not a bad
film.
Performance. I know there are some cameos that, again, we won't spoil, that you need to look out for. We won't talk about those. We'll just talk about what you already know, which is, yeah, it's a really solid prequel that reminds you of the magic and the majesty of the Willy Wonka universe, and made me immediately want to go back and watch the Gene Wilder one right afterwards. No, actually, that's not exactly what happened, was it? What happened was we walked up to the projectionist and said, can you wind that back and play it again?
So, yeah.
That was our first response.
So... I can't remember the last time that I saw a film and got 20 minutes into the film and wanted it to start again.
Yeah.
That is how much I loved Wonka within 20 minutes, my jaw's on the floor, my eyes are popping out of its head, and I want to start this film and do it all over again.
And that's I think, because I think every element of it is perfect in every possible way.
I said
shot beautifully.
That was very similar to, obviously, the taking the line from Mary Poppins is my line for Wonka, is it is practically perfect in every way.
And I see how you got there, because there is a Mary Poppins element to his
very
character.
So.
Also, Doctor Who, some people have said it's a bit Doctor Who-ish
okay,
as
yeah,
well.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, you could see that. But these are all classic characters in which we warm to those characters, right? They're celebrated icon.
Yeah.
In terms of character, you know what I mean? Like Doctor Who, everybody loves Doctor Who, everybody loves Mary Poppins. I think what it's got, aside from the fact that it's beautifully shot and beautifully put together, it is as colourful as you would expect, of course.
Yes.
One of the things about Willy Wonka is, of course, all the different kind of...
Wonderful.
You know, like, it really is an assault on the senses in the best possible way.
It absolutely pops out of the screen.
It pops, yeah, it really does pop in terms of that. So, yeah, cinematography-wise, I mean, it's beautifully cut. Every single performance, including from people like Olivia Colman, of course.
She's wonderful.
Yeah, just everybody in this movie. That, like, we could list off the whole cast.
Tom Davis is my hero.
Or the announced cast. Don't ruin the cameos. The Hugh Grant, Oompa Loompa.
Yeah, yeah.
The young lady that plays the orphan is phenomenal.
Calla Lane.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome. She just has that magical element about her presence and her performance, as does he. And then they work together as a dynamite combo, I think. There's a real beauty to that friendship that they have.
So I believe, I could be completely wrong, and if I am, I do apologise. Did you, I believe that when you spoke to Paul, you actually said, how did you top Paddington?
You'll hear that in a minute. Because you haven't heard it yet.
No, I haven't. Because under heavy, heavy embargo that even I haven't heard it.
But we all thought we love
Paddington. Paddington 1 and Paddington 2. We love it.
It's
up there in the upper echelons of family movies. They're phenomenal.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing with the doubt going into the film, because it's like, how's this guy going to top Paddington?
Yeah, because you're on two strains here, aren't you? On the one hand, I don't know. As a creative person, and again, this links back to the... I'm linking back to the James Newton Howard interview again. Here he goes with his James Newton Howard interview. No, it's relevant because James Newton Howard said, when we were talking about his process, he said, my process is I'm always trying to make the best score I've ever made with every new score I make, right? And I think... I'm the same way. I always try and make the best thing I've ever made in this moment, right? So I guess I don't know about that in terms of where Paul comes from as a director. But if that's his goal, how does one do that? Because Paddington 2 is the bar. But he's operating on two levels here. He's got two perfect films to follow up in a different universe, albeit. But also, he's got this entire... We talk about universes. He's got this entire beloved franchise here. Roald Dahl characters, the Willy Wonka film, the Gene Wilder one, of course, which is held in very high regard. So he's playing in a world that's beloved, whether that be in book form, TV form, film form. He's dancing in that. He's swimming in that pool. I'm trying to use the metaphors. But at the same time, he's also following on from one of the greatest films ever made. And again, I know you haven't heard it, but this is one of the things I did try and address with him. And it was a three-way battle between myself, Paul and Neil Hannon about me trying to convince Paul that he's made one of the greatest films ever made, him trying to be incredibly humble and deflect that, and Neil basically going, I'll just take this one, Paul, honestly. like he's right. So, yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful interview. But yeah, I was just so bamboozled by it. And there were some shots in there. Again, Joby's score is gorgeous. It's just gorgeous. It complements Neil's songs really, really well. Neil has made some songs that work within the whimsical framework of this world that we're in, you know, the fun, zippy nature. I mean, I've still got the songs in my head now, some weeks later. The chocolate and pocolate thing.
Chocolate, brilliant.
And there's chocolate. Yeah, that, it's there. I love that as well. In all these takes... And all the takes in the music takes as well. I love the fact that in the movie, there are a couple of times where Chalamet's performing and then he kind of does this little thing where he giggles in between lyrics, like he's having the best time of his life.
Yeah, yeah.
Those moments are on the soundtrack, by the way. So,
oh, are they really?
Yeah,
okay.
You can hear him, like, he'll start singing something and he'll do this little thing where he giggles and then he does it, like, because he's literally living his best life doing this gig. And it shows. I think it comes across. There are shots in there, as I said to you before, that, you know, when you see, when we look back to things like Oscars and BAFTAs or the BFI, and we have this kind of these short reels where they show you 100 years of cinema, and it goes back to things like Singing in the Rain,
yes,
and
yeah,
things like
and Mary Poppins.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have these golden moments of cinema that have defined cinema over 100 years. I think there's a scene, and you know the scene. There's a scene in there.
Yep.
I think that will be shown in those reels.
Completely agree.
For decades to
completely
come.
Completely agree.
Because it does harken back to that. It reminded me a lot of classic musical storytelling. It reminded me of Oliver. It reminded me of Annie.
So I was
singing
literally
in the rain.
About to say, yeah. I think that, bearing in mind we've grown up with Mary Poppins and Oliver and Annie and films like
yeah.
that. We've, you know, there's just, we didn't know life without them. I think that watching this movie for the first time with your family must be how it would have been to see Mary Poppins for the first time.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a special magic to this film that there is going to be a whole generation of children, I believe, that will see this film
yeah.
as we saw Annie or Oliver.
100%.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
It's perfect.
It's absolutely perfect, as you said. In fact, you're absolutely right. It is absolutely perfect in every possible way. I can't find any fault with it. I enjoyed it. It's a proper good time at the cinema. All singing, all dancing, quite literally. Music's perfect. Performances are perfect. The story is just wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those films that, as you say, you come out, we talk about these a lot, you come out of the cinema and go, life's not so bad, is it?
Oh.
And I think at this time of year as well,
yeah.
the timing is absolutely spot on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is, I think, and that's, and of course, we can now all go all the way back to the beginning of what we were going to say, which was talking about films that aren't necessarily set at Christmas, but they will be Christmas classics.
Yes.
This fits that.
100%.
Absolutely.
It will be watched for decades and decades and decades. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it goes without saying that I'm giving it a 5 out of 5, and you are as well.
Yeah.
I did not think that I would see a film this year that would top Mission Impossible as my film of the year. Wonka has just done it. Wonka's done it. Wonka is my film of the year so far. I'll be amazed if I see anything better. But I've said not only is Wonka my film of the year, but it's one of the best films I've seen in the decade.
Honestly, I think, by the way, I apologise. Anyone that's been playing a drinking game for every time I've said absolutely, I am not, I'm not replacing your drinks cabinet. I'm sorry. I do apologise to McHugh and Tom Cruise and Lorne and all the team over at Mission HQ. Your film is incredible. It is the action film of the year.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Without any shadow.
Yes.
Well, I think Wonka's just taking pole position here, right at the end of the year, snuck in there right at the end of the year and just went, here I am.
I just think in our wildest dreams, we couldn't have imagined something as good as what it is.
Well, the thing is, with Paul King attached,
I mean, again,
it was going to be good.
And that's going back to what I said at the start. I was expecting a solid 4.
You look at all the ingredients. Hey, there we go. It's a sweet treat. There it is. Let's get all the chocolate puns out of the way now. Yeah, it just sits right on your tongue. But it's really great. And I think it's all the right elements as well in all the right places. Solid cast, great cinematographer,
hilarious,
great editor.
Cast, hilarious jokes all the way through. It's got
composer,
it's got
songwriter.
Everything. Neil
Hannon, Divine Comedy. There are songs in there as well. You pointed this out. There are one or two songs in there that you could see Neil performing himself as Divine Comedy.
I could hear them. Yeah. I could absolutely hear Neil performing them when Timothy was doing it. And I just, again, I have no idea if this is ever going to happen, but I would love to see the Divine Comedy performing this as a show, a concert, whatever. I'd love to see them actually performing them.
I will. That's my stomach. I'm hungry. That's because we're talking about chocolate. Yes, I would say I'm seeing Wonka Mania happening this Christmas.
Yes,
I'm sure of it. And I can see already there's some really, really nice merchandise flying around. Yes, please, Warner. Yes, please. But also, you know, I think Wonka chocolate's going to be a thing under the Christmas tree this year.
Definitely.
For sure. Wonka is back. Willy Wonka is back and bigger and better than ever, and it's just wonderful. It is my film of the year so far. It's definitely our film of the week. Wonka, it's got a PG certificate. It's in cinemas and theatres. It's in cinemas from Friday, the 8th of December. It is in theatres from the 15th of December as well. Please do go and see it. It will make you very, very... It will make your heart smile. 5 gold stars from us.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right, I suppose we've waxed lyrical enough about the movie. I guess we should probably talk to somebody that knows a little bit more than us.
Yes, so Paddington 1 and 2 director Paul King, who is, of course, the director of Wonka. And I was very lucky to get one of 2 interviews with Neil Hannon, the songwriter of the songs in Wonka. Of course, he is the frontman of Divine Comedy. So Paul King and Neil Hannon joined me earlier in the week to talk more about the film. And I'm incredibly excited now to welcome onto the show the fantastic Wonka director Paul King and the mastermind behind the brilliant songs in the film, the Divine Comedy's Neil Hannon. Welcome, chaps. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Very well. How are you?
We're doing very well, thank you. Very excited about this conversation. And my first question is for you, Paul. Paddington and Paddington 2 are 2 of the greatest cinematic masterpieces ever made, it's fair to say. And yet...
Oh, I can't let you get away with that.
I can't. I'm getting...
Hopeless exaggeration.
And yet somehow...
Basically Raging Bull.
Is that The Godfather and Paddington 2? The real cornerstones of cinematic history.
They are. And yet, somehow... You've managed to smash your own bar with quite easily my favourite film of the year so far. Do you know what? Even possibly of the decade.
Thank you very
much. With Wonka, quite simply, how did you do it? What's the secret to making the perfect family film?
Well, gosh, I'm struck dumb. We're going to need another 8 minutes for me to get over that. It was I was very lucky with this project to be able to sort of tread in the footsteps of one of the great storytellers of all time in Roald Dahl and one of the great family movies in the Gene Wilder movie I was thinking of especially, and they're both incredibly dear to my heart, and I think I sort of encountered them both at such a young age that they sort of became part of what I thought a good story was and what a good movie was, and to be able to get to sort of channel that spirit into something new was a real privilege, and to be able to do it with songs written by one of my great heroes in Neil was a joy.
Shucks. Now I get to be embarrassed.
They are brilliant songs. Neil, how did you get involved with the film, and what were some of your first thoughts and reactions when you first heard about the concept and saw the script and so forth?
Well, about 3 years ago, Paul emailed me, I think, and then we had a Zoom. And it was like I'd sat down and, you know, made a lovely letter to Santa saying, may I have, please, the best sort of job in the world, which is to write new songs for a new Willy Wonka story. Because I too, loved the original 1971 film and all of the songs therein, you know, all the great Anthony Newley and Leslie Bricker's songs.
Paul, you worked with your dear friend, brilliant Simon Farnaby, on the story for this. But as I understand it, this is a completely brand new story, right?
That's right, yes. So it's set 25 years before the events of the Chocolate Factory. And it's before Willy Wonka sort of retreated behind the walls with the Oompa Loompas. And it's about him as a young man taking his first steps into the world.
Good evening, gentlemen. I brought my invoice. One chocolatier moved on for the usual fee. Oh. Here we go, baby. Here's the good stuff.
Tell me, Chief. How would you like to earn a few more of those?
Oh, I am listening.
We think that Mr. Wonka might require a little more than simply moving on. Oh. He's good.
Too good.
And what's more, he only charges a sovereign a chocolate. So anyone can afford them. Even the... You know, the...
The poor?
Oh, dear. I've just been a little bit sick in my mouth. Could you please refrain from mentioning that demographic in my presence?
He doesn't like it when people say poor.
Sorry, Felix.
We want you to send Wonka a message.
Backed up by physical force.
That if he attempts to sell chocolate in this town again, he is liable to meet with a little accident.
And Neil, tell us about the process of writing some truly, truly brilliant songs for the film, and what kind of conversations were you having with Paul about what they should sound like and how they should work within the framework of the story?
Well, I was sort of there while the story was almost, you know, in gestation. And so, you know, Simon and Paul would give me reams of lyrics about, you know, of what was going on in the songs. And I would, you know, bash out my ideas. And, you know, some worked first time, some definitely did not. And we needed quite a few sort of versions to get to the place. But unfortunately, you were always right in the end. It's very annoying.
Well, I think what was interesting for me was that the songs are so sort of integral to the film that it sort of had, it was really became, Neil became sort of third member of the writing team, really. And we sort of had to find the shape of the film and the shape of the story with the songs, or they would just feel like hideously boring things that you stopped the film to have. And to find us, the great thing about Neil is he's a brilliant songwriter, but there's a great sense of storytelling in lots of his music, and to be able to use that was a treat.
And Paul, someone that perfectly performs not just all the songs but gives a command performance in this film is Timothy, who is just outstanding. And as I understand it, your first and only choice for the role. Tell us a bit more about that, and also how you built this incredible cast.
Well, I was a huge fan of his from Call Me By Your Name, which he performed in when he was very young, and I thought the performance was extraordinary, but I didn't know whether he was just the perfect kid for that role. But then later in the year, I saw him in Lady Bird, and he was completely different, very funny, playing this absurdly pompous character, and went, oh no, you can do absolutely anything. And he was only sort of still a teenager, but I thought that he's going to be one of the great actors of his generation, which I think has very much turned out to be true. And what's so great about him is he's very keen to challenge himself and push himself, and to do a film where he has to sort of really carry the emotional burden of the story and yet at the same time be eccentric and funny and sing and even occasionally dance is a huge challenge. And he's in pretty much every scene, and he's just great. He's so good that you forget about the other Wonkas of the past and I just enjoy his performance, which is extraordinary.
And I was blessed to be given a great singer in the lead role. Phew.
He's, yeah, very, very good. Just finally, before we go, a very quick question for you both. Wonka is, of course, an iconic chocolatier. And so if you could each create the perfect chocolate, what would that comprise of? Paul, you first, then Neil, please.
Ooh, well, I'm a big salty caramel fan, so I think it would probably have a little bit of that in, and a bit of Wonka magic.
Marmite and peanut butter eclair.
Oh, dear.
Oh, that's an interesting choice.
I'm not really a sweet kind of guy, weirdly. I'm more savoury. So I'm totally miscast.
Yeah, if I'd known that, I'd have gone entirely in another direction.
Yeah, I know.
Guys, thank you both very much. The film is incredible. It's in cinemas on the 8th of December. It's called Wonka, and it is simply magical. Thank you both for your time, and congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
Ah, good man. Thanks. Thank
you. Where do we start?
Making chocolate, of course.
Run away!
Every good thing in this world started with a dream. So you hold on to yours.
I guess it's time to change the world.
Bumpa, lumpa, dumpa diddy. I'm not in premium economy.
Good night, sir. I am going flat.
There you go. How funny are they?
Amazing. Oh,
they're great lads,
aren't
they?
Absolutely amazing.
Paul King and Neil Hannon there, the director and songwriter for the film Wonka, which we have given 5 stars. If you want to hear more from Neil Hannon, there we go, I found my stride. He is joining Sean and I and Joby Talbot, the composer of the film, so you can get a full deep dive on Wonka's music. That's from the score and the song perspective on the composer series, Sunday the 10th of December. I only said the 8th because the film's out on the 8th. Sunday the 10th of December, 6 p.m. on Express FM, or right after on Monday the 11th of December. Hold tight on this very channel. You can hear it uncut on Scoreheads. There you go.
I would really recommend listening to those. And I don't usually recommend anything else John does because he's nothing without me.
Wow, dude. Wow. What was that? Plus one at Wonka? What was that?
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. No,
what was that? Plus one at Wish? Yeah. Sorry.
But honestly, right, no, seriously, go and listen to those because they will be absolutely phenomenal.
To be fair, this podcast would be possible without you because I definitely couldn't do this on my own.
No, without either of us, without either of us. We're both amazing. I joke, I kid.
You are. He's good, really. I just rag on him. I'm like a big brother that... Yes, yeah, like that. That kind of relationship.
Let's move on from the Wonka loving because it is truly amazing and I'm sure we're going to talk about it for weeks to come.
I'm going
to
get him in an arm lock in a minute and rub his head.
So coming out on streaming this week is the sequel to Chicken Run after how many years?
Dawn of the Nugget.
When was the first one out? It was a long time ago, wasn't it?
I don't want to say.
Yeah, it might age us. But the first Chicken Run, of course, is superb. The sequel, Chicken Run Dawn of the Nugget, which is just a genius name, isn't it? And that's out on Netflix on Friday the 8th of December.
I do believe, yeah. And select cinemas.
Is it really?
Select cinemas, yeah.
Okay, I'd like to see it at the cinema. I would. I'd like to see that at the cinema.
Select cinemas, but on Netflix.
That would be, do you know what? What a great double bill to take the family to. Chicken Run Dawn of the Nugget and then take them to see Wonka afterwards.
That is holiday season viewing.
Isn't it right? Yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
Haven't seen it. Very much looking forward to it. We'll probably review it next week because I undoubtedly will watch it with the family over the weekend. So featuring Tandwi. I've said that. You're looking
Tandaway,
at me.
Tandaway Newton. Tandaway. I think it's Tandaway.
Right, okay.
I believe it's Tandaway.
We apologise. We are the podcast that gets people's names wrong. We do it with the goodness of our heart, we promise. And Zachary Levi as well.
I love Zachary.
Yeah, I love him as well. He's great. So, yeah, again, very much looking forward to that. That's on Netflix on Friday the 8th. Right.
You've seen this. I haven't. And that's probably my fault because I do believe we got sent it early. And I can't remember if either of us watched it.
Are you talking about Chicken Run?
No, we're talking about Candy Cane Lane.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm thinking Candy Cane Lane and my stomach's now going
about
candy,
food, chicken, candy, and candy,
chicken,
and Wonka.
Chicken, chocolate, candy, chicken burger.
China, the Chinese chicken.
Wow. Candy Cane Lane, this is the Eddie Murphy Christmas movie, right?
It is the Eddie Murphy Christmas movie that's on Amazon Prime right now.
From Reginald Hudlin. Who's done a bunch of movies. Like, I think he did Boomerang with Eddie Murphy back in the day. Do you remember the movie where Eddie Murphy was a major player and then got served by Halle Berry in the movie?
I don't think I've seen
it. It's a
Boomerang.
Movie called Boomerang. Right,
yeah, I know there is a movie called Boomerang.
So Boys to Men, End of the Road.
Yeah.
That's the theme song for the Boomerang movie.
Okay.
Another one of those cases where the song outlived the movie, right? But Boomerang was a movie where Eddie Murphy was a player. And of course, and then he falls hard for Halle Berry, who's not having any of his nonsense. It's a great little film. Yeah, it's on Paramount Plus.
Okay.
Little plug for Paramount Plus there. There we go. I think it's on Paramount Plus.
So...
Yeah, I think that was one of the times I remember that director and start working together anyway.
Candy Cane Lane on Amazon Prime right now, starring Eddie Murphy, Tracy Ellis Ross and Gillian Bell.
Hey, everybody, this is my wife, Carol.
Hello.
Here we come a-caroling among the leaves so green.
Nope. That is weird.
And this is my son, Nick.
Jolly old St. Nicholas, lean your ear this way.
And you guys remember Holly?
The holly and the ivy.
And this is my oldest daughter, Joy.
Joy to the world.
Wait. Whoa. We're all named after Christmas stuff?
Am I seriously? I'm just now figuring this out?
I have to admit that was my idea.
It is a great family movie. It's about a man who is really... you get this in America, like the whole street competes on who has the biggest National Lampoon's house type thing.
Yeah, it's a common thread in Christmas films.
Who can outdo each other. Well, this year there is a contest to win a rather large amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And he has just lost his job.
Right.
So he needs that money more than ever. And he is doing everything he can to win this contest,
mm-hmm.
including going to a rather questionable shop, signing a rather questionable bill that he doesn't know the amount of, And of course, that will have no repercussions at all, will it?
This will come back later.
I'm not going to go into it. There's a trailer out there if you want to know a little bit more. What I will say is we sat down and watched this on Friday when it came out with the whole family. It's, you know, we were talking about doing a feature before, whereas judge a movie by its poster. If I had to ask you to pre-score this movie without seeing it, you would give it a
3,
and you would be correct.
Yeah,
it's not going to change your world. It's not going to be the Christmas movie that you watch forever and a day, but it's a thoroughly enjoyable couple of hours that's got Eddie Murphy doing Eddie Murphy things when he makes these family type movies. There's lots of elements of Dr. Dolittle and other bits and pieces.
I would expect him to be Dr. Dolittle, Shrek Eddie Murphy, not Delirious Eddie Murphy, because that would be weird in a children's film. Very weird. Funny, but very weird,
yeah. And funny enough, my wife said while we were watching it, she's like, I just can't get Donkey out of my head.
Yeah,
just Donkey.
There is that.
But listen, it's
if your son or daughter ever walk out of a living room with a television in it and say, Dad, what's the fart game? Then you know you're in trouble.
it's a really enjoyable couple of hours. It's not great. It's not awful. It's nice. It's a nice little family movie to sit down and watch over the Christmas period. Gillian Bell is very good in this. I'm a big fan of Gillian Bell, actually. I really like her. She's great in this. All the children are great in this. Nick Offerman has a very questionable English accent in this. That's all I'm going to say about that. Very questionable English accent.
Is that by design, though?
I don't think so.
Like in a Don Cheadle Ocean's 11 kind of way.
Although I was reading about that, funny enough. I was reading about Don Cheadle's bad English accent in the Ocean's films and how they played into it for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, and didn't he want... There was a thing, wasn't there? He wanted billing with the rest of them, and then they wouldn't give him the billing, so he said, don't bill me at all, which is why he's not credited
in
the first
one. He's not credited in Ocean's 11.
But then when he came back, he was like, can this just be... I can't remember what he said, or something along the lines of, we could lose the accent by saying it was a thing that my character did.
Yeah.
And then I can just be... And then they're like, no, you have to keep it now.
Keep it, and then
it's like a
if
thing,
you'll notice in Ocean's 12, he's reading a book about bad accents and things like that. So,
yeah. I still think that...
And of course, in 13, he actually plays an American as well, but puts on a really bad American accent as
I love... They kind of went, do you know what, we'll just... Soderbergh, like, do you know what, we'll just lean into
heavily
it.
Heavily lean into it.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. Oh, like Daniel Craig's character in Knives Out. I've said this loads of times, but someone suggested to Ryan Johnson on Twitter that every time Daniel Craig's Benoit Blanc turns up in a sequel to Knives Out, he has a different accent every time. And Ryan Johnson was quite receptive to it, but he hasn't done it.
I'd
love the idea of Daniel Craig's character having a different accent for every time he turns up to investigate something.
Well, I don't know what you're I went a little bit Foghorn Leghorn there, didn't
but
I?
So is he.
Yeah. What you're talking about, boy? Crazy little boy. Always getting in trouble around here.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good. But we've completely gone off the beaten
track.
Yeah,
let's come back. Come back around.
Come
back.
If you have a young family and you are looking for a family movie to watch at home, you can do a lot worse than Candy Cane Lane. I would give it a 3 out of 5. It is not the best movie you'll ever see, but it is an enjoyable couple of hours.
The
there you go. That's
are here,
that one.
Jack. The boat.
Jack.
We should probably... Do you know what? I didn't put this in the list. We should probably mention the 4K Ultra HD Collector's Edition of Titanic does drop this week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Right. Shall we hear from our last guest?
Yes. So Joe Barton is also on the show. He is the writer of The Lazarus Project, Seasons 1 and 2. Season 2, of course, is doing Great Guns on Sky TV right now. Now, you and I think at the time when The Wonderful Joe was available, I think we were also in different interviews at the same time, weren't we?
Mm.
So the amazing Hayley Donaghy actually offered to take some questions to Joe for a conversation about Lazarus Project. So let's hear what they had to say.
Hello, Joe.
Hi, Hayley.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good, how are you?
Good. Yes, good. A pleasure to talk to you. Thank you. I mean, firstly, congratulations on the success of season one. Wow, BAFTA winning for best TV drama over in Wales. Just how did that feel?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, well, winning the BAFTA was lovely. We got to, because we'll be filming Newport and Cardiff, so we sort of, qualified for the Welsh BAFTAs, and we were really, delighted, surprised and delighted to be nominated. And then, winning, it was great. Got to go and have like a like sort of BAFTA knees up in a nice Welsh hotel. Welsh people, they know how to have a good time. That was a good evening. I'll just say that. It was a good time.
Must have felt very special. I always love asking, you know, writers and creators, firstly, kind of what inspired and spawned that initial seed of an idea for the Lazarus Project, you know, and then sort of what made you go on and create it?
Yeah, I mean, the initial thing was I was sort of reading about, like, I don't know why I was reading about it, but I was reading about sort of near misses in the past of, like, almost sort of moments where we've almost nuclear war has almost broken out or some sort of awful world ending event has almost occurred. And I don't know, I was sort of struck by like how sort of fragile our existence on the planet is. Big sort of just fun thoughts like that keep me up at night. And I was sort of thinking about that and all of these times where there's been sort of almost disaster. And it sort of struck me like, well, you know, I don't know, what if those sort of bad things had happened? What if there had been a nuclear war? What if this had happened or that had happened? And the sort of concept of a sort of little group of people that exists solely to undo those sort of events and they have a time machine was my idea. And I thought, oh, that could be an interesting way of sort of, I don't know, exploring different ideas and characters and stuff. And it felt quite sort of high concept and splashy. So that was the sort of initial idea. And then, yeah, just went off and convinced Sky to let us make it, and here we are.
That's amazing. That sounds like something that would definitely keep me up at night, those sorts of thoughts. Yeah. Sorts of thoughts and dreams. I wouldn't like to hear about your dreams. But what about the sort of sci-fi angle of it? Obviously that fits so well with that idea that you're talking about. Were you a sci-fi fan growing up, and what are some of the sort of movies and shows that you hold in highest regard?
I like sci-fi. I'm trying to sort of fit, and not sort of, I don't think I love it more than any sort of other genre. I guess I try to think. I mean, Star Wars, obviously, is an obvious one. But have you heard of it? It's good. It's I remember watching that as a kid. My school, when I was in junior school, they did this thing where the year fives, for some reason, year five, there was like one day they would take us to the sort of local cinema and watch like an old film. And when it was my year's turn, they played the first Star Wars movie. So I got to sort of, well, the first time I watched Star Wars was on the big screen, and that was quite a sort of, I think, a very formative moment. And I used to watch like a lot of Thunderbirds. I'm not sure that's a sci-fi. Is that a sci-fi? Maybe it's a bit sci-fi, and sort of stuff like that. And so yeah, I was sort of like, quite sort of, when you're a kid, it sort of captures your imagination, I guess. And I've kept that. And yeah, it's a fun sort of, it's just a big sort of sandbox, isn't it, that you get to play in, these big sort of, you can create these sort of outrageous ideas or worlds or any of that stuff. So it is, yeah, for a writer, it's a really fun genre to work in.
Yeah, exactly. No rules or your own rules, whichever ones you make up. That sounds like a really lovely, yeah, really lovely cinema experience. Really nice story. So, yeah, obviously the first series was just a huge success. But I wondered for you what you feel it is about the show, you know, and was about the show that resonated with audiences and obviously is going to keep them coming back for season two.
The quality of the writing, I was going to bring people back. No, I don't.
Of course, number one.
People just respond to it. No, I don't know. Do you know, I think within the sort of the big sort of concept, the sort of question at the heart of the first series was what would you do to bring back someone you love? So this, the idea was that the main character of George, played by Papa Asiedu, his partner Sarah, played by Charlie Clive, had died, had been sort of killed in this accident. But he had the opportunity to bring her back by sort of forcing the hand of the Lazarus Project to use their time machine to go back in time, and she would sort of reappear, obviously. But the sort of concept was that the Lazarus Project will only turn back time if the whole planet is in danger. So the concept was that this guy has to essentially bring about a world endangering event to save the life of his partner, save sort of one life by endangering, you know, millions. So there was a sort of moral question, which obviously is, you know, that's on a really big scale. But I think what people like, what I like as a viewer, you know, even if you're watching something that has a massive concept, is that what's the idea that at its heart you can relate to, and I think everyone can relate to, you know, what they might do for someone they love, whether it's a partner or, you know, a parent or a child or a sibling or whatever, you know, what you would be willing to do to keep that person safe. And so I think that's my theory, is that that's the sort of thing that people relate to and wanted to see more of. Or it might have just been the car chases, I don't know.
Yeah, the car chase. I was going to say, season two, have we got another motorhome versus a motorbike? Or what have we got this time?
Yeah. People were like, that motorhome versus the motorbike one. People were like, there's no way that motorhome would have kept up with that motorbike. But that's true. No, there is. Yeah, we've got some more car chases. We've got some, what have we got? So, we've got, definitely got some SUVs flipping over, and we've got all sorts of things exploding. And we sort of, I say we travel the world. I mean, again, we film most of it in South Wales, but we the appearance of traveling the world, we go to Tokyo and Shanghai and all these places. And blow stuff up and you know, have gunfights and all that stuff. So there's lots of propulsive action.
Lots of action to look forward to. And yeah, I was always wondering, for the season two, you know, was the idea already in your mind sort of before it was greenlit, or was it something that you developed once you knew the demand was there for more?
You sort of are always encouraged to think of an idea for a second series. If you're lucky enough to get a show on, they are like, you finish it and you're exhausted and you stagger over the finish line, and then the commissioner's like, hey, have you got any more ideas? And then you have to, you know, you sort of have this very quick turnaround of trying to come up with a concept. If you're sensible, which I wasn't, you have all this stuff planned out from day one. But I didn't. So the first series ended, and I was like, okay, great. Like, what can happen next? So we sort of, you know, I went off with the producers and we stayed at some sort of golf hotel for a weekend and it's like drunk a lot of wine and talked about time travel and tried to come up with that sort of concept. And then presented that to Sky, and then yeah, it was, and then they greenlit it, and it was such a quick turnaround. We got the official green light and we were on set 2 months later. It was this very, very, very quick process. So you know, the whole thing was sort of, ironically, time was against us the whole way through, but yeah, it was a lovely sort of creative challenge to get ourselves out of the slight sort of story cul-de-sac that we found ourselves in at the end of the first series.
Gosh, if in doubt, go and play golf and drink lots of wine. Yeah. I love that strategy. And obviously fans love watching Papa Sidhu. What do you enjoy most about sort of seeing him bring George to life and writing for him?
He's a wonderful actor, obviously. Just, you know, it's a joy to work with, you know, all these sort of brilliant, talented people. Papa's just got this amazing ability to draw you in. He's very relatable, you know, whatever he's playing. I watched him in he's in Black Mirror recently, where he's playing like a devil or some sort of demon. He's playing this demon that was encouraging this young woman to sort of murder people, and even when he's doing that, you're like, oh, just something about, you know, you want to be with him, you want to see where he's going. And he's just got this great, yeah, I don't know, a likability, I suppose, is sort of you know, this sort of charm. And I love working with actors that are funny, and Papa's very funny in real life, but he and all the cast are just very adept at they can do all the pathos and the drama and the, you know, all that kind of high stakes stuff, but they can do the sort of funny and the charming and that, which is, I think, is important, because, you know, you'd never want something to be too po-faced or too serious, I think. So they, you know, he's just a very charming, funny man. Sickening, really.
Absolutely. Oh, well, really, really love talking to you about it, and best of luck with the new series. I know fans will be very excited to watch it when it comes on in November. Thank you, Joe.
Oh, thank you, Hayley.
Joe Barton there, talking to Hayley Donaghy about The Lazarus Project Season 2, which is currently streaming on Sky. So do go and check it out. It's great fun. I really like this. Do you know what? I didn't know about this until this came around, and I've since gone back and watched Season 1 and 2. I really enjoyed it. It was fun. So there we go. That's on Sky right now.
Right. Of course, it is coming up to Christmas. Therefore, it's coming up to gift season, and there are lots of 4K Blu-ray DVDs and digital films that you can purchase.
So much so, I don't think we need to review these, because I think we should probably just shout them out, because otherwise we're going to be here until Christmas.
So we are literally just going to rattle off some of the biggest and best. So you have A Haunting in Venice, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, that's a 4K steelbook. Barbie is out, that's an exclusive film.
Yeah, so that's an Amazon thing. It's the Blu-ray and the soundtrack in a box set, which comes in like a box with the Barbie box.
Oh, so pretty.
That's out this week. Pretty. Yeah.
Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, The Color Purple 4K, The Way of the Dragon 4K, and Past Lives.
Yeah, so a lot of 4K steelbooks coming out. Way of the Dragon, obviously, being a classic, Bruce Lee. And Past Lives is probably one of the greatest films of the year. I mean, it almost, a couple of times, it was lodged in there as film of the year for me, and then I had to sort of shift it aside because Mission came along and then Wonka. So it's in my top three, but yeah, it's phenomenal, Past Lives. It's such a beautiful, beautiful film. So I would recommend that. Given that Titanic is also out, I would say Titanic's one of the greatest films of all time. However, Past Lives does need some love here because it is new and it's great, and I would say that's my choice for the week.
Right, so we're going to talk now about our tip top five, and this week, in honour of Wonka, which is certainly our film of the year and one of my films of the decade, we are going to be doing our tip top five musicals. You're looking at me very blankly. You have nothing prepared, do you?
When do I ever?
Jonathan!
No, it's always me first because you like putting me on the spot.
I do,
but
yeah.
Also, it gives you time to think if your top five was actually in order.
No, I have my top five here ready to go, but I don't want to give you any hints.
We had this massive conversation
earlier. Before we start, I want to ask you a question, okay?
Yeah.
With a musical... When you say a musical, how do you define it? I'll give you an example, right? Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Is it a musical?
I guess, yeah.
I would say it's not. Because
they don't break into song.
In my eyes, you break into song, there's generally a dance routine that goes with it and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
That is a musical for me. Because I had Bohemian Rhapsody in my shortlist and I decided not to include it for that reason. Because yes, there is music, but it's them performing on stage and rehearsing and recording in the studio, etc.
Yeah,
I would not class that as a musical.
Right.
What was the Elton John one? Rocket Man.
Mm-hmm.
I would class as a musical.
Yes, because they break into song.
Because they break into song.
Shall we break for this?
We're going to need a bigger pod. Tip top five.
There you go. Thank you very much, Simon Bruce, always, for not only making sure our jingles are all up to speed and we sound amazing, but also for actually literally making us sound amazing in that he is our editor and producer for this episode. So thank you very much, Simon Bruce. There we go. Tip top five then from me. Okay, so we know how this goes by now. I walk in and go, we talked about this off air, and I said that actually I quite like the dynamic of you being prepared and me not being prepared, because I will then just mention the first five things that pop into my head, which is a really good litmus test, because if those are the five things that I've remembered, those are the five things that have resonated and stuck with me for however long.
So
the first five, and I mean, I kind of feel like we're already there because we've already mentioned these because of Wonka, but things like Singing in the Rain, Oliver, Annie, those kind of things resonate with me, I think, and have stuck with me throughout the years. I think Chicago needs an honourable mention as well because it's pretty stunning. What would I say was my favourite musical, though? On film? Or, yeah, I guess, well, it has to be musical movies, doesn't it? I don't know. I'm going to go completely classic and say The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Wizard of Oz. Because I think Wizard of Oz is one of the... All Sound of Music, but I'm going to go with Wizard of Oz because given the choice of the two, I know Sound of Music is great and it is one of the greatest films of all time. I would say, given the choice between Sound of Music and Wizard of Oz, I would say Wizard of Oz, for me, is the better movie. So, yeah, and it's one of literally the greatest films ever made. So I think being number one, Wizard of Oz is a good choice. So, yeah, that's me.
So, you know, I said that I had my top five prepared. I can't count. I just checked my numbers and I had six.
But I think I just said six. So it's the tips. Si, you're going to have to go all the way back to the drawing board, mate, and create a tip top six jingle. Can you just stop for a minute and go, the tip top six?
Tip top six.
We're keeping all of this bit in, by
listener's
the way.
Listener's choice.
Yeah, listener's choice. Tip right, top six.
No, what I'll do is what I will take out is I had Wonka, okay? And I truly believe that Wonka will be in my top five. How I've worked my top five, if I look at a film and immediately a couple of songs jump into my head, I go, right, that's it then.
Well, I've got that right now with Wonka because the minute you said it.
Yes, exactly, and I've got it in my head as well. Yeah. So... But for pure ease, I will take Wonka out just for this, okay? So, okay. Again, this is in no particular order. Mary Poppins, Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yeah, actually.
Little Shop, Little Shop. Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
Grease.
Yeah.
and Moulin Rouge.
Okay, I was going musicals in the traditional sense. I think I went all traditional musicals, didn't I?
Well, I would say, what would you
That's
say
good,
in there
though.
Is...
No, I think you've
what
balanced...
What would you say in there is not a traditional musical?
No, but I'm saying like in the kind of Rodgers and Hammerstein, like old school, right, okay. kind of Oklahoma kind of way, right?
Yeah, because I've got films in here, for example, like Bohemian Rhapsody, Hustle and Flow, 8 Mile, stuff like that. Which, and Star is Born, by the way, 2018. But in my eyes, they're not, they might be music films, but they are not musicals.
Yeah, I would say that is a really nice balance between my choices and yours, because you've gone kind of, I say modern,
yeah,
but 1980
modern.
For Blues Brothers, but yeah, a bit more modern.
How old are we if we're saying that 1943 years
classic,
old is modern?
The classics, I think I've gone with the classics and you've gone with the more kind of new... I say modern, but new. You know what I mean?
I've got Mary Poppins in there.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, between those two things, I think between your five and my five, that's a hell of a day.
It's not bad, right?
Hell of a weekend at the pictures, for sure.
Right, shall we hear from our listeners? The We're Gonna Need a Bigger Pod Listener's Choices. Okay, it is time for our listeners' tip top fives. Right, so starting with Sarah Thomas. Sarah said Xanadu, Grease 2, Mamma Mia, Sound of Music, and Hairspray.
There's a lot of love for Grease 2 out there. I kind of feel like Grease 2 has a cult following.
Listen,
now.
I don't hate Grease 2. I don't hate Grease 2. I quite like it. I'm a big Michelle Pfeiffer fan.
Very
as well,
different
so.
Reasons. They're different movies, but the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Our very own Simon Bruce has done his top five. So Simon Bruce is in reverse order. Number five, Top Hat from 1935 with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers.
What a choice.
Rogers. Number four is Anchors Away from 1945 with Gene Kelly and Frank Sinatra.
Be careful how you say that.
And he says, this has got a famous dance sequence in the film. Mickey Mouse was originally meant to be the dance partner for Gene. However, Walt Disney refused to have his famous character appear in the MGM film. So Kelly turned to MGM's own animation studio and used the Jerry Mouse of Tom and Jerry fame.
Interesting. Yeah, I remember that. It was iconic.
He's gone with a new one for number three with Roald Dahl's Matilda the Musical. Number two is The Blues Brothers. And number one is Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, see, I had Singing in the Rain on my list. Well done, mate.
We need to mention Donald O'Connor's somersaults, as he was admitted to hospital for a week after its completion for exhaustion and carpet burns.
I'll bet.
That sounds like a good evening to me.
What, carpet burns?
And exhaustion.
Don't take this. This is a really nice, fun, upbeat, musical-friendly discussion. I know you're going to talk about carpet burns in your sordid past.
I was talking about somersaults. What are you talking about? I don't know what you're on about. Right, Wayne Johnston. Number five, Oliver. Number four, Sister Act. Great choice.
Good choice.
Number three, Blues Brothers. Number two, The Greatest Showman. And number Pitch Perfect.
Very good choices.
James Secker, number five, Idlewild. I haven't seen that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that. No, okay. Well done, mate. Yeah,
number five, good. Idlewild. Number four, The Greatest Showman. Number three, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. Number two, The Nightmare Before Christmas, which is a great choice.
Oh, excellent.
And number one, Chicago. And then literally just came in before we started recording, Julia Minty in no particular order, Singing in the Rain, Oliver, Grease, Mamma Mia, Here We Come, and Rocket Man.
Oh, look at that.
After we were just talking about it.
I think we've, between us all, and that includes you, the listener, I think we've got a great collection of musicals there. There's quite a good to-do list if you've never been into musicals before now. We've got some really good starting suggestions there. Thank you, everybody. That was fantastic. Yeah,
thank you very much. That is us done for another week.
Yeah, it is. Thank you very much to you for being you.
And thanks for you for being you.
I was talking to the listener.
To you, to me.
Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Paul. Thank you to Simon Bruce, who will now whisk this away and make it sound much, much better than I ever could. And thank you to View for making sure that we've always seen everything. MyView.com for your nearest View cinema. And thank you to ExpressFM Studios too. By all means, do listen to ExpressFM if you would like. If you're in the Portsmouth area, especially 93.7 FM. I can't believe how long I've been here and I nearly got that wrong. 93.7 FM or on your smart speaker. Just shout play ExpressFM. We're also on the ExpressFM app. ExpressFM.com if you live outside of Portsmouth. You can check this guy out. He's on every day from 10 a.m. at weekdays. I'm around sometimes. I'm on the Composer Series Sundays at 6, where you can hear that Wonka music special. Chocolate and Pocolate. Bye.